In our study tonight in Numbers chapter 13 and 14, of course, those two chapters discuss the sending in of the spies, the report of the spies, the result of that report from the people, and how that they responded to it. We know that the spying out of the land took 40 days. I want to call your attention to that which they brought back from the land in verse 23 and 24. In particular, we note that they brought back a cluster of grapes that was so large they carried it on a pole or a staff, as it's called here, between two. They also brought pomegranates and figs, and this impressed the people. We've noted also in our previous study in verse 27, it says, "They told him and said, We came into the land whither thou sentest us, and surely it floweth with milk and honey, and this is the fruit of it." So this is quite an impressive place that God has prepared to give unto the children of Israel, and the timeliness of it, as God had spoken to Abraham in Genesis chapter 15, and now is the time to go in and take the land. And the spies report generally is, 10 of them at least, report that we are not, verse 31, able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we. And they brought up an evil report of the land which they had spied out unto the children of Israel, saying, "The land through which we have gone to spy it out is a land that eateth up the inhabitants thereof, and all the people that we saw in it are men of great stature, and there we saw the Nephilim and the sons rather of Anak, who come of the Nephilim, and we were in our own eyes as grasshoppers, and so we were in their sight." So they minimize their ability to go in and to take the land. Now, we see that the people respond to the report of these spies. Well, they believe what these spies have reported, that we can't do this. And when we talk about Joshua and Caleb, their report was, yes, we can. And Joshua and Caleb become two very major players or characters in this portion of our study, because their affirmation is not in their own ability, but in the fact that God is with us. You see that in verse 9. And we've talked about that. God is with us. And consequently, their defense is removed from them. And however, the people declare that they want to kill Joshua and Caleb, and they are not willing to go in and to take the land. Now, in the remaining few verses, or several verses, of the 14th chapter, we see the consequence that was to be imposed. And what was that? The consequence. Jenny? Because you didn't go in and take the land, what's going to happen? Well, that's a whole lot of folks. They're all going to die because you didn't believe me. Lynn? Well, no. You mean, in fact, that perhaps some did? Well, I don't much think that any would have escaped the wrath of God. They're the subjects of God's wrath, and any who would not go in, they're going to die. Who are 20 years old and older, because they did not believe God. Now, escaping and going back is evidently not an option. God would know. He would know. And so the point is, God tells them that your dead bodies shall fall in this wilderness. I find that interesting in light of what you've asked. They're not going to go back to Egypt and die. They're going to die here. In this wilderness. And he said, you're going to wander for 40 years, and you shall bear your whoredoms until your dead bodies be consumed in the wilderness. 40 years, verse 34, he tells us. And then, in verse 36, it says, the men whom Moses sent to spy out the land, who returned and made all the congregation to murmur against him by bringing up an evil report against the land, even those men that did bring up an evil report of the land died by the plague before Jehovah. But Joshua the son of Nun and Caleb the son of Jephunneh remained alive of those men that went to spy out the land. All the 10 spies now die because of their evil report. Now the people say, well, we've sinned. We'll go in and do it. Now what was the consequence of that? Too late. Too late. Make a mental note of that. You know, sometimes we need to act while time and opportunity is present, because there may come a time when it's just simply too late. I was talking about that very point with one just recently, and they acknowledged that, yes, that does come true. There was a gentleman in Kennett, Missouri, that a neighbor across the street who was a member of the Lord's church. This gentleman was not. His wife was. But she had an uncle that was in the hospital dying of cancer, and she wanted me to go talk to him. Well, I went and tried to talk to him, but because of the circumstance, he was heavily medicated. He was in and out of consciousness. And, you know, Jesus instructed the apostles to go teach. Teaching has to come first. Now, a man who is in and out of consciousness, how do you teach him? He's not dead yet. He's existing is what he's doing. But as far as learning is concerned, he's waited too late. It's just too late. Now, these people had waited too late. God had given them opportunity to go in and take the land. And it's too late. And so what happened to them? Well, it tells us that they were beat down even unto Hormah. The Amalekites came down, and the Canaanite who dwelt in that mountain, and smote them and beat them down even unto Hormah. So they were driven back. They were not successful in going in to take the land. Now, as we continue our study, I want you to look at this map. This is the one that we're going to try to follow because it's the one that's in your book. Now, I know we've introduced alternate routes of the travels of the children of Israel and reasons why those alternate routes exist, what evidence exists that causes people to believe that perhaps these locations on this map may or may not be accurate. And so I'm not going to do a lot of speculating. I have some opinions about the location of some of these places. But the events that happened are the things that we want to note. It is well admitted that the location of Etham may not be here. It may be down here. The location of Mount Sinai may not be here. In fact, it may be over here in the wilderness of Sinai here instead of what is many times identified as here. And so instead of coming down and this being the place where the Ten Commandments were given, it very well may be that they came down this way and crossed here and the Ten Commandments given over here on a place that has been identified as Mount Sinai. And so if we take the crossing here, then the location of some of these places is moved that way. Now, I'm not going to go into all the reasons and wherefores and evidences that exist for doing that, but what I want to note is what happened as they journeyed toward the promised land and now their refusal to go into the promised land. Raises questions also about the location of Kadesh Barnea. Keep in mind that the locations that are on this map are not positively known locations. In fact, there's a great deal of doubt as to where these places are. So it is entirely possible that Kadesh Barnea may not be located here. It may be located over here in this area. And so we can talk about that if you like privately. But for our purposes, we want to notice what happened. These spies were sent in from the place called Kadesh Barnea. And they came back with the evil report. And they the children of Israel did not go in, and they wandered for 40 years until all of that generation died. Now, that's the thing that I want you to take home with you tonight as we look at the names of these places, again, places that are not definitely identified. And this is one that I wanted to pause at for just a moment. In Deuteronomy chapter 1, Deuteronomy chapter 1, note, if you will, in verse 46, Deuteronomy chapter 1, verse 46. There the text tells us, "So ye abode in Kadesh many days, according unto the days that ye abode there." It simply tells us they stayed there for quite some time. But they would wander until that generation died. You'll see evidence of that in these previous verses, in particular verse 37 through verse 40. And by the way, we could talk about verse 40, returning unto the way of the Red Sea, which would be over in this area somewhere from Kadesh. But be that as it may. But what we want to note is that they messed up. And the New Testament tells us what that is. There's a word that's used for it. They didn't believe God. They entered not into the promised land because of unbelief. Turn, if you will, to Hebrews chapter 3. Hebrews chapter 3. Juan, you feel like reading some for me? Hebrews chapter 3, would you begin reading there in verse 12 and read down through verse 19, please. Hebrews 3, 12 through 19. Uh-huh, please. Beware, brethren, lest there be in any of you the evil heart of unbelief and departing from the living God. But exhort one another daily while it is called today, lest any of you be hardened through the deceitfulness of sin. Through 19. Right, the Hebrew writer simply tells us they didn't believe God. He's made this promise to Abraham to give them a certain land. It's been on the minds of generations from the time it was given to Abraham. This is the fourth generation. Of course, we talked about how that Joseph, before he died, instructed the people of God to carry his body into the land where God would lead them. So Joseph was very much aware that this land was to be theirs. And now the people have opportunity to go in and take it. And the writer, Hebrew writer, tells us they just didn't believe God. They did not believe God. Now the warning of the Hebrew writer is seen in the first few verses of the fourth chapter when he said, "Let us fear, therefore, lest haply a promise being left of entering into his rest, any one of you should seem to have come short of it. For indeed we have had good tidings preached unto us, even as also they, but the word of hearing did not profit them, because it was not united by faith with them that heard." Now, very simple point. The Hebrew writer is warning them of, if you want to go to heaven, you're going to have to act. You believe what God says and you act upon it. Now, the temptation to them is to return to the practices of the law. And if they do that, you lose everything. And so, a very stern warning given to them. Now, this particular segment of our study is called Waiting for a Generation to Die. And that's what it is. They're waiting to die. Some of them have perished, as Richard pointed out, in the battle with the Canaanites and the Amorites as they've been driven back from the first of the villages that was in the land of conquest. and driven back to Kadesh, God meant what he said. You're going to die. And that's just the way that that is. So for 38 more years, 40 years total, the Israelites stayed in this region of Kadesh Barnea until this generation died. Now, I was in a study with someone this past week, and we were talking about some of these things. And I wanted it to be made very clear that these 40 years were not just 40 years of existing from day to day to day to day and all their needs being provided by God, just waiting until this generation dies of a ripe old age or illnesses that might be associated with growing older. That was really not the case. I want you to look at the period of time that we're discussing. Let's go back to Numbers. Numbers. And let's begin reading in chapter 16. Numbers chapter 16. In Numbers chapter 16, we read about a man whose name is Korah. What was it that Korah wanted to do? All right. That's right. So here is a man that he had some responsibility already, but he wasn't content with that. He wanted to divide things up with the leadership and assume leadership. And he had a following, as often we find existent in something such as this, where someone wants to be a kingpin, he's going to find somebody that will listen to him. And so was the case here. And if you read in the text, we note a man by the name of Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab. And here are some that evidently are very much influenced by Korah. Dathan and Abiram. In fact, so much so that God said to Moses, tell the congregation to get away from them because I'm going to destroy them. And we know that God did destroy them. How? The earth opened up and swallowed them, along with 250 of their followers. And as we look at the text, how did the people respond to that? Moses and Aaron got a problem. Here we've got these men that desire to have some leadership role, and God shows the people of Israel who He has appointed to be their leaders by opening up the earth and swallowing these 250 men. How did the people respond to that? Wouldn't you think they would clap their heels together and say, yes, sir, we'll follow Moses and Aaron? How did they respond? They complained some more. Yes, they murmured. And let's read the text beginning at verse 41. It says, but on the morrow, all the congregation of the children of Israel murmured against Moses and against Aaron, saying, ye have killed the prophets of Jehovah. And it came to pass, when the congregation was assembled against Moses and against Aaron, that they looked toward the tent of meeting, and behold, the cloud covered it, and the glory of Jehovah appeared. And Moses and Aaron came to the front of the tent of meeting, and Jehovah spake unto Moses, saying, get you up from among this congregation, that I may consume them in a moment. And they fell upon their faces. And Moses said to Aaron, take thy censer, and put fire therein from off the altar, and lay incense thereon, and carry it quickly into the congregation, or unto the congregation, and make atonement for them. For there is wrath gone out from Jehovah, the plague is begun. Now God said, I'm going to destroy them in a moment. And Moses' instructions was, do this quickly. Can you see Aaron dragging his feet about preparing the incense and seeking the fire from the coals of the altar? No. The text tells us in verse 47, and Aaron took as Moses spake and ran into the midst of the assembly, and behold, the plague was begun among the people, and he put on the incense and made atonement for the people and stood between the dead and the living, and the plague was stayed. Now they that died by the plague were 14,700, besides them that died about the matter of Korah. And what I want you to see in this is we are not looking at a people that are just going to have all of their needs met and be on vacation for 40 years and die of a ripe old age in good and happy times. They're not that smart, that's right. They're not well put. You know, they just couldn't keep their mouths shut. And now we've got 14,700 dead because of the plague. Well, I had not done the math on that, but that is an interesting observation, isn't it? But what we do see is that's a large number of people to die in a moment. As you turn the pages just a little bit, you'll note also in the 20th chapter, in the 20th chapter, that Moses begins to get quite exasperated with these people. In fact, once again, in Kadesh, in the first part of this chapter, the people are complaining once again because they don't have water to drink. And look at what Moses said in verse 7. Jehovah spake unto Moses, saying, take the rod and assemble the congregation, thou and Aaron thy brother, and speak ye unto the rock before their eyes, that it give forth its water, and thou shalt bring forth to them water out of the rock, so thou shalt give the congregation and their cattle drink. And Moses took the rod from before Jehovah as he commanded him. And Moses and Aaron gathered the assembly together before the rock, and he said to them, hear now, ye rebels, shall we bring you forth water out of this rock? And Moses lifted up his hand and smote the rock with his rod twice, and water came forth abundantly, and the congregation drank and their cattle. And Jehovah said unto Moses and Aaron, because ye believe not in me, to sanctify me in the eyes of the children of Israel, therefore ye shall not bring this assembly into the land which I have given them. And these are the water of Meribah, etc., etc. What are we reading? Moses messed up. In his exasperation, Moses said, shall we bring forth water out of this rock and take care of you? Well, now granted, Moses got a great responsibility and no doubt is genuinely exasperated because of the continued murmuring of the people. But I want you to see that because of conditions of stress, you don't allow yourself to be pushed over the edge. And Moses did. He did. Shall we bring you forth water? We often read this passage and we say, well, Moses was prevented from going into the promised land because he smote the rock and didn't speak to it. We know that earlier, in fact, in Exodus chapter 17, about 40 years before, he had brought forth water out of the rock by smiting the rock. But now we see God didn't tell him smite the rock. He said speak to the rock. But the major offense here is he is claiming credit for providing for these people. And God said, you'll not go in. Aaron didn't go in either, by the way. Neither Moses or Aaron were allowed to go into the promised land because of what they did here. They did not sanctify the Lord. Now, that's important to us. We'll come back to that in just a little bit and talk more about that. You'll notice in verse 24 of this same chapter that Aaron was not permitted to enter into the promised land for his participation in what took place here at the waters of Meribah. Now, well, let me pass beyond that. I already talked about that. Let's pass beyond that. Get behind on my charts. All right, Moses sent to the king of Edom, asking permission to go toward the promised land through Edom. Now, that, again, raises questions about the location of Kadesh Barnea, whether it was here or whether it was down here. And they go up this way instead of this way. But that's a whole other subject of discussion. What we want to know is, what was the relationship of the children of Israel with Edom? God had already told the Israelites that you can't have Edom's land. In Deuteronomy chapter 2, if you'll look over there, beginning in verse 1 through verse 8, we see why. It says, "Then we turned and took our journey into the wilderness by the way to the Red Sea." Terry, flag that for me. "As Jehovah spake unto me, and we compassed Mount Seir many days. And Jehovah spake unto me, saying, Ye have compassed this mountain long enough. Turn you northward, and command thou the people, saying, Ye are to pass through the border of your brethren, the children of Esau that dwell in Seir. And they will be afraid of you. Take ye good heed unto yourselves, therefore. Contend not with them, for I will not give you of their land." No, not so much for the sole of the foot to tread on, because I have given Mount Seir unto Esau for a possession. "Ye shall purchase food of them for money, that ye may eat, and ye shall also buy water of them for money, that ye may drink. For Jehovah thy God hath blessed thee in all the work of thy hand. He hath known thy walking through this great wilderness these 40 years. Jehovah thy God hath been with thee, thou hast lacked nothing. So we passed by from our brethren, the children of Esau, that dwell in Seir, from the way of the Arabah, from Eloth, and from Ezion-Geber. And we turned and passed by the way of the wilderness of Moab." Now, just hold that thought. When we go back and study the history of the Edomites, how did they come into existence? That's right. They descended from Esau. We've got Jacob and Esau, the sons of Isaac, and these descended from Esau. Yeah. Well, they go back to brothers. The Israelites descended from Jacob, and Edomites from Esau. So yes, they're cousins. And God said, "I'm not going to let you take their land. So you can pay them for food and water as you go through, but you will not take their land from them." Well, now they've got to find a way to go into the promised land. Why not? Well, why not just go right on and march through Edom? Told them not to. You can't just take their land away from them. So we've got to figure this out a little bit differently. So they move forward to Mount Hor, the text tells us. And while they were waiting for the message from Edom, Aaron died there. He was 23 years old. Numbers 33. You can read about that. And the Israelite soldiers retaliate against the Canaanite king. We could talk about that. Called the place Hormah. But let's get back to our map. Mount Hor on our map that's in our book directs us through then this way to go into the promised land. Now, having said all of that, well, I'm going to pass by this point. We've got it in our in the text there about them not going back to the king's highway. They continue through what the scriptures describe as a terrible land to make their way north. Again, the exact route not specifically defined in scripture. And so we've got an assumption based upon the locations of these cities. But the thing that we want to come to is in Numbers chapter 21. They're complaining again. What does God do about it? Numbers 21. That's the serpents. Yes. God sends fiery serpents among the people, and they bite the people. And notice, if you would please, that much people of Israel died. Verse 6. Do you see that? Let's back up just a little bit. Regarding the matter of Korah, we had 250 men died. Regarding the plague, we had 14,700 died. Regarding the snakes, now we've got what the text calls much. Many people died. And the people cry unto Moses, to cry unto God to get rid of the snakes. Question, does God get rid of the snakes? Nope, he doesn't get rid of the snakes. He tells Moses to build a serpent of brass and put it upon a pole, and whoever will look upon the brazen serpent will live and not die. Interesting observation just here. Do you suppose for a moment that someone being bitten by these poisonous serpents would lay over behind a log all swelled up about to die and say, I can't do that, Moses, because if I look upon that serpent of brass, I'll be healing myself. That's kind of been their track record, yes. But we note in John chapter 3 that Jesus said to Nicodemus that as the Lord lifted, or as Moses lifted up the serpent of brass in the wilderness, so must the Son of Man be lifted up, that whosoever would look upon him should live. Now, what we see in that is that as the people in the wilderness were to look upon this brazen serpent, it involved more than just believing that they could be healed. They had to do something. And as we look upon the Son of Man, it's more than just believing that he is. There's something that has to be done. How do you look? If you want to be healed from the guilt of sin, the bondage of sin, what do you do about that? You have to have that sin forgiven. And, of course, through the blood of Jesus, he's provided the means where that can be accomplished through our obedience to the gospel. There's something to be done. And we want to make that observation just here. But the poisonous serpents were not removed. They remained. And the people then were to learn to depend upon God. We note in chapter 21, in verse 21, that Israel sent messengers unto Sihon, king of the Amorites, saying, let me pass through thy land. We will not turn aside to the field, etc., etc. But would Sihon allow that to take place? Nope. And what did Israel do about that? They took it. That's right. They took it from the Amorites. And they proceed on. Camping places after Mount Hor are identified here. And again, we don't know where any of these are. Now, just an observation I want to make with you. What happened, and don't ask me to tell you the passage because I can't remember right now, but what happened with that serpent of brass much later in their history? That's right. People were worshiping it. Do you think for a moment that perhaps the location of some of these places might be unknown for the same reason? We don't know where these places are. We don't know the exact route that the children of Israel took on their way into the promised land. But what we do know is that though these places have not been identified, that they are traveling on their way to take the land that God has promised to give them. As they come a bit further on, as you look on this map, they come to a place called Mount Nebo, Moses does, and we want to talk about that. But before we do, you see that they cross through Moab. Now tell me about who Moab is. Who is Moab? The people that dwell here and the Ammonites that dwell here. That's right, the descendants of Lot by his daughters, incest, and we've got these people then dwelling here. But I want to return to the book of Deuteronomy. There's some material I want to cover with you that's not in our lesson book, I don't believe, unless I just inadvertently overlooked it. But if you'll turn to Deuteronomy chapter 4, I think this passage, though, is mentioned in our lesson book. Deuteronomy chapter 4. Whether it is or isn't is kind of beside the point. But look at Deuteronomy chapter 4. In verse 25, Moses tells them, now, by the way, the book of Deuteronomy, for the most part, is composed of speeches that Moses makes to the people of Israel. And in verse 25 of Deuteronomy chapter 4, It says, when thou shalt beget children and children's children, and ye shall have been long in the land, and shall corrupt yourselves, and make a graven image in the form of anything, and shall do that which is evil in the sight of Jehovah thy God, to provoke him to anger. I call heaven and earth to witness against you this day, that ye shall soon utterly perish from off the land whereunto ye go over the Jordan to possess it. Ye shall not prolong your days upon it, but shall utterly be destroyed. Before they go in to take the land, Moses is telling them, when you have grandchildren, perhaps even great-grandchildren, and they go in and take the land, here's what's going to happen when you begin to worship idols. Now, it's not a matter of if you do. Here's what's going to happen when you do. You'll be destroyed from off this good land. Now, it's not exactly like they were ignorant of this. If you'll turn the page to Deuteronomy chapter 6, Deuteronomy chapter 6, Deuteronomy chapter 5, verse 33 it is. It says, ye shall walk in all the way which Jehovah your God hath commanded you, that ye may live, and that it may be well with you, and that ye may prolong your days in the land which ye shall possess. Now, what's the reality? Verse 2 of chapter 6, that thou mightest fear Jehovah thy God to keep all his statutes and his commandments, which I command thee. In verse 3, hear therefore, O Israel, and observe to do it, that it may be well with thee, and that ye may increase mightily, as Jehovah thy God, the God of thy fathers, hath promised unto thee in a land flowing with milk and honey. And then in verses 4 through verse 9, what are they to do? Teach your children. Teach your children. Why? Verses 10 through verse 15. These are passages, if you haven't already, you need to mark these in your Bible. Take note of them. Verses 10 through 15. Why do you need to teach your children? Because when you come into the land and you begin to partake of vineyards that you didn't plant, you begin to eat the produce of crops that you didn't labor to have. You live in houses that you didn't build. And you begin to prosper at the hand of all of these who have done this work for you. Then what is it that you're likely to do? You'll forget. You will forget. Now, how many times have we noted already things that were to prompt their memory? Remember the plagues, God had said. Crossing over the Red Sea, remember this. The observance of the Passover, remember what I did to the Egyptians. Now you teach these things to your children, lest when they come into this land and begin to partake of the fruit that they didn't labor to have, that they forget. Now if you forget, what's going to happen? Look at verse 15. He'll destroy you from off the face of the earth. That's right. Now again, it's not like they didn't know. When you turn the page again, look at chapter 8. Chapter 8. Verse 11. I need a reader. Donnie, you want to read some for me? Verse 11, please. Would you read down through verse 17? All right, look at that. You're going to come into this land, you're going to partake of all these great things, and then you're going to forget about God. And you're going to say that I did this. Now in verse 18, he said, "But thou shalt remember Jehovah thy God, for it is he that giveth thee power to get wealth, that he may establish his covenant, which he sware unto thy fathers as at this day. And it shall be, if thou shalt forget Jehovah thy God, and walk after other gods, and serve them, and worship them, I testify against you this day that ye shall surely perish, as the nations that Jehovah maketh to perish before you, so shall ye perish, because ye would not hearken unto the voice of Jehovah your God." Why do you suppose God keeps telling them this over and over and over and over again? Keep forgetting it. These are the people that keep murmuring and complaining, even when God has given them great and good things, and they're not happy with that which God has provided for them. Well, let's turn the pages just a little bit more over into the book of Deuteronomy. Turn, if you will, to Deuteronomy chapter 28. Deuteronomy chapter 28. Jenny, you feel like reading? 1 through 6, please. Terry, if I may have you pause right there. Terry, if you would, be prepared on the heels of that to read verses 15 through 19, please. All right, Jenny, verses 1 through 6. All right, Terry, 15 through 19, please. All right, these are mirrors, one of the other. Blessed are you if you keep the commandments, but if you don't, then on the other hand, you'll be cursed in everything that you put your hand into. Now, you read that throughout the 28th through the 30th chapters. Now, in the 30th chapter, how much time do I have, Richard? 5 minutes? About four? Okay. Reader. Verses 1 through 10. 1 through 10. Chris, would you mind to read some for me? Please.
Your heart, the heart of your descendants, to love the Lord your God with all your heart.
All right, several things in here. I don't have time to talk about all of them. We may start here next time. But I want you to notice that little word if in verse 10. Little word if, as we read in chapter 28, verse 1, and then chapter 28, verse 15. If. Now, Moses, as he presents this to the Israelites, beginning in verse 1, he identifies that blessings and curses, this is the subject that he's discussing, but in verse 2, he said, if you return unto Jehovah. In fact, I think in verse 3, Chris, in the translation you're reading from, did it use the word restore? I believe so, in verse 3. Then will Jehovah thy God restore? Yes, okay. So Moses is doing more than assuming here. What are these people going to do when they're brought into the land? What are they going to do? They're going to forget. They're going to worship idols. And when they worship idols, what is it that God said He would do to them? He would curse them. He would destroy them. They would be scattered among the nations. Now, He said, when you return, or rather, I should read it correctly, if thou shalt obey the voice of Jehovah thy God, then what's God going to do? He will restore them into the land. Now, there are a number of reasons why that's so important. We'll talk about that Sunday. But He will restore them into the land. If they turn unto Jehovah and obey His voice, contained in the commandments, look carefully at verse 10, His commandments and His statutes which are written in this book of the law. What is it that Israel must learn to do in order to be restored? Obey what? The law that's written, which is the law of Moses. The law of Moses. Now that's key because we want to talk about what can't be down the pike somewhere in the future at the second coming of the Lord. Not going to be a restoration of Israel in the future here, you see. But there was in their future. But the point that's being emphasized here is this is what God said He would do to you. And when you come into the land, this is what you're going to do. And God's going to do just exactly what He promised. Terry? Okay. Okay. Anna. Okay. So the people have been returned. I want to suggest to you that that return, restoration, occurred during the days of Ezra and Nehemiah and Zerubbabel and Haggai, these Old Testament characters that we can so read about. Yeah. Yeah. So when they're released from Babylonian captivity by the decree of Cyrus, the king of the Medes and the Persians, this was fulfilled. Okay. All right, let's stop.